Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, February 6th, 2014. And I need about 7 hours tonight instead of one. There are so many topics to cover. I'll be talking about alternative energy, volcanoes, some chemtrail issues, geoengineering, the sun off balance in its output, the fact that we have over 80 solar monitoring stations around the world, and we have absolutely zero reporting from the cumulatively from those 80 stations, all of them literally funded from the U.S., many of them partially funded from other locations. The ongoing winter weather issues, situation in education, who's taking over education? And of course, I've talked a lot about Wikipedia being taken over and cleansed and rather ethnic religious cleansing, as science is a religion today, not a science. And also about wind energy, specifically when I talk about energy. Anyway, a boatload of topics, so I'm going to get going right away without further ado. First, I want to call attention to some postings that are currently on my webpage. The first one is I'll be talking about on the show, but the myth of alternative energy. Germany, Britain, and following the Dutch realization that the three-blade wind generation systems are a farce, I couldn't believe these numbers are so low myself. I couldn't believe them. When all of this baloney started about installing a base of three-blade wind generators, I did my own analysis of these, and very simply put, the multiple blade horizontal shaft wind generators don't scale up. In fact, there's no commercial wind generation system on the market today that scales up. And the scaling up means as you make it bigger, does it still work efficiently? And the answer is no. And so any blockhead would have had to have known this. But the bigger and bigger they make them, the less and less efficient they become. If you make a little wind generator, in fact, these work on sailboats and small, out in the country, people have wind generators. They're little, and they're actually quite efficient, because those babies can spin around like crazy. They can spin very fast, and the blade, basically, one blade cuts the wind right behind the other blade because they're moving so fast. So as you get to bigger and bigger blade systems, all of the efficiency factors go down exponentially. And so as the square of dimension, of the radial dimension, and so as you get to bigger and bigger ones, like the common 1.5 megawatt wind generators that you see scattered all over Nebraska and Iowa and in the Dakotas, tremendously inefficient. But anyway, the results are in from England and Germany, 2% efficiency. And now, I don't know if those are the actual results. The investors are flipping out. It's given alternative energy and wind energy a bad name and a black eye. And all of the government control, which is permission and the, in a lot of cases, like the Obama incentives, etc., for wind energy, are all going asunder because they simply don't work. And so I'll read from my page here that the same ignorant investors do not understand that they had been had from the very beginning. Invested in a technology that could never have worked. All of this even promoted by the big energy and nuclear all of this even promoted by the big energy companies, many of whom supplied essential components to the wind systems like Siemens and General Electric, who also, by the way, are heavily invested in nuclear and other components of the energy industry. This facade I pointed out long ago. They always knew that the three-blade systems would fail and take the government's investors down with it when it all came to roost. So anyway, read these postings on my webpage. I'm not going to reread it all here. Also, a posting on my webpage about geoengineering. There's two links, and now I never, ever put links to other things on my webpage. But this time I did. There's a woman who worked in the Air Force, and she has a video online and talking about the chemtrail spraying out of jet airplanes. That's about a 20-minute video. You go to my webpage and see it. The webpage is JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Seven letters, JMCCSCI.com. And then click on the links to view these videos. The second one is about an hour and 17 minutes. It's given by a guy named Dane Wigington, and it's an excellent expose on geoengineering and the current status and the importance of stopping this process right now and the nutcases who are doing it. He brings in a lot of other topics that I talk about regularly, including the cleansing of Wikipedia, the peer-reviewed journals, who is left in the universities, the cleansing of universities, and the fact that people there just don't either know anything, or if they do know something, they don't talk about it. Anyway, go to the webpage and take a look at that. So anyway, this week also I'm going to be talking about a little more sun. Last week I talked about supernovas, and I'll be talking more about solar conditions today. But at any rate, be sure to go visit my webpage regularly. The updates there. We are in an information war out here. It's an absolute struggle. It's getting thinner and thinner, and everything that pops up, any information that's real, is either taken over and clouded. Now, for example, the Dane Wigington is the guy putting out real information about geoengineering. But on the internet, there's going to be a dozen other shill-sponsored websites with crazy people predicting that all kinds of bizarre things, and also there's other shill sites that try and say this is conspiracy theory, don't believe it. You know, the amount of attacks that the people come under who try and get out real information, it's just, like I say, an information war out there going on. So at any rate, be very careful when you go to the internet, and I won't have these links up very long on my webpage. I do not put links up for a purpose, because once people go to those places, typically they lead to other places where there's a lot of misinformation. Okay, so on with the other topics of tonight's show. First, I'm going to talk about solar conditions. I've talked about this before, but I want to reiterate that the sun's output is very much off balance. As I said earlier, over 80 monitoring stations around the globe monitoring the sun monitoring stations. We have satellites that were built. We have special programs under NASA that were initiated to monitor the solar output in all aspects of its solar spectrum. And not a single shred of information comes out of any of these sources. I used to regularly visit the websites of these locations and get information. Now, literally all of it has been removed from access to the public. But, in an essence, what's going on is the visible energy spectrum of the sun is down. The total energy coming to us in the visible energy spectrum is down. But there's a tremendous increase in ultraviolet radiation, which is very damaging. Now, I just want to do a little offshoot here. And in the Dane Wigington presentation, he talks about the dying forests. And this I have talked about on my show before and witnessed myself. as I drive around the nation's forests, and they just are in terrible condition. Some of the north and northeastern forests that, for example, would harbor, say, a tree like the birch tree. It's a tree that likes cool climates. It grows in a seasonal manner. It grows during the summertime, and then, of course, it's frozen during the winter, so it drops all its leaves. But it's a very sensitive. It lives in a humid climate, probably with a lot of cloud cover, a lot of rain, so it likes moisture, and they are all dying off. In the northern woods, the birch tree is just suffering because that tremendous blast of UV is simply killing those trees. Pine trees, you might call them evergreen trees, you might call these, but the spruce, the balsam, the pine, and related trees, tamarack, other trees, are suffering also. And I don't think they're going to be able to last very long. For example, the moose populations in the northern states, the north central states, is dying off. And they're wondering, well, gee, why are the little moose dying? They're being born, but they're dying at a very young age. Well, they, you know, if you got the big trees dying off, there's no seeds to grow the little shoots that the little moose eat. Very simple, but gee, the DNR just can't figure it out. They got studies going on, and let me do another offshoot also, talking about the die-off of the Pacific Ocean. Recently, an article about starfish dying off, and they're not just some of them dying off. Like, there are cycles of disease and other bacteria on starfish and cause them to have a die-off. But what happens is, as with many biological systems, they overgrow, overtake an area, and then due to their own, this actually happens with humans, because of their own excretions, literally, create bacteria that are harmful to their own species, it generates bacteria that's harmful to their species, and they die off. But the die-offs are typically what you might call controlled. They die off to a certain level, then you don't have them congregating in the numbers they had before, and they're able to come back. And this is common of any type of plant or animal. We see this in wolf cycles, in wolf moose cycles. We see this in the coyote rabbit cycles, for example. The same thing, where they cycle, they build up, and then they die off. And these are regular cycles. But now what's going on is the plankton in the ocean is dying off. It appears to be a combination of excessive UV light and radiation from Fukushima in the Pacific. Just unbelievable. But the one of the points is that the sun is out of balance. And so I've talked about this before, about the cause of the cold weather. And I want to talk, too, about the Dane Wigington is one of the videos that I have referenced on my homepage, talks extensively about weather modification and climate modification, geoengineering. And these are very true issues. These are things that are going on. They have been for decades, and they have to stop. The Earth can no longer suffer under the insane aerosol spraying that's going on. I've mentioned before on the John Moore show, on my own show, on other shows, that the high pressure cell sitting off the west coast of California that's been blocking moisture and causing the tremendous drought in California is man-induced. That this is not a natural phenomenon. The other types of weather phenomenon we're seeing are due to man-manipulated systems. Some people say that there are no naturally occurring weather systems anymore, and they are modified. Remember, there's modification going on. Nobody creates all the weather or modifies all the weather. The weather is still going on. We still have all the electrical conditions around the Earth. And so what they are doing is modifying currently existing systems. And so you have to understand that. Nobody creates weather. Nobody has the energy to go out and replace all of the electrical energy that's powering our solar, our Earth-based weather systems. What they are doing is modifying the energy systems that are already there with spraying, with barium the aluminum oxide and the other barium compounds that they use, and HARP and the many other radio installations around the world that they use to control weather. But don't forget, and this is one thing that I'll mention, if you watch the Dane Wigington video, which is about an hour and 17 minutes, he completely misses one very important point. And it's not a criticism, it's just that he's a layman, and this is typical of many people who study HARP. They don't understand that the modern and one of the most important techniques for controlling weather is the laser satellite. The HARP induces the high-pressure cells, and the laser satellites induce the low-pressure cells. And when you combine these, you can move weather around and hold them in patterns for weeks and months at a time, and that's what's going on. We see a lot of the weather manipulation in the Pacific is due to laser satellite technology, where they develop the low-pressure cells and they spin the air up to the Arctic. You can see it going all the way up to the Arctic, where it drops down. And so this term polar vortex, this is the Weather Channel phony baloney term that they've used, that everybody repeats. They just have a knack for misinformation, how to create misinformation and how to repeat it so that everybody repeats it. And I don't know how many people I've talked to on the phone, relatives, friends, people that are fans from the show, and they go, "What do you think about the polar vortex?" It's like, I guess it's a polar vortex causing all this cold weather. It's like, no, there ain't no such thing as a polar vortex. That's complete weatherman phony baloney. And by the way, the weatherman is not a well-educated, smart guy like you probably think he should be. The weatherman is a doofus. His job is to repeat what he is told, just like every other howdy-doody an announcer on the evening news. They read the news. They're news readers. They go to news reading school. That's what they are. They're not there to inform you. It's not like the old days where the reporter went out and was on the front lines. Like, remember Dan Rather, who was in Vietnam on the front lines reporting. Those were the days of reporters. That doesn't happen anymore. Now you have news readers, people who are told what to say, and they, behind the scenes, are the news writers, the people that write the news and tailor it, homogenize it, and blend it for your listening enjoyment. So at any rate, back to the sun. The sun is off kilter. Its energy output is distorted from the standard. Now, the standard model for the sun is a black body of 6,000 degrees. That's like an orange color. If you took a piece of metal and you heated it up to about 6,000 degrees, it's not quite 6,000 degrees, you would get this orange color, and that's about the color of the sun. And there's a whole spectrum of light that goes along with this, down into the microwave region, all the way up into the X-ray region. There's a spectrum of light associated with this. The sun is anything but black body. I've talked before about the fact that the solar energy does not come from the core. The core model, fusion model of the sun, is complete bogus baloney. The people who were inventors of that, like I say, when I was at Cornell, I talked to Hans Bethe, one of the main contributors to that model, and he said, yeah, we know there's something wrong with this. And he was very interested in the work I was doing on surface fusion and the fact that the space probe data was supporting my convictions. And talked to him many times. I'd go up to his office at Cornell and chat with him and talk about his days back with Albert Einstein It was many things happened when I was at Cornell, many good things, and I also learned that there was major league control in all the departments, and it was top down from the astronomy department. They were like God at Cornell, Carl Sagan in the astronomy department, and if they said something, everybody did the quick two-step to their beat, and let me tell you, that's what I ran into, of course, there, butting heads with basically the astronomy department as I was in the physics department, and then later for a year and a half in the math department. So, I've seen the inside story of how they control information in a big major research institution, university, not the teaching universities like the state universities, etc. Cornell had serious money pouring into it for research from the national level, of course, and from private funding. But at any rate, here is something that just was an email from a listener. And by the way, thanks for all the listener emails. They point to things that I don't have time, of course, to scour the internet every week and look for issues and topics. So it's really wonderful that the fans are out there sending things in that I should take note. This is from a listener email. There's a debate that's going to occur between the science guy, Bill Nye, the science guy, and a creationist. And I don't know if this has already taken place. I think the email came in on the 3rd of February. But I wanted to comment on this dialogue, this so-called dialogue between creationism and science. Now, science has been, you have to understand, science, so-called science, has been taken over by atheists. And you have to put the block right where it belongs. The issue of science, and the issue of who controls the universities, like almost everything in society today and in government, there's been a elimination of Christians and Christian beliefs and Christians themselves, and it was been taken over by Jewish elements, and there's no other way to put it. The government, the NSA, the CIA, is the police force of the Jewish world bankers. And so the top-down effect as it goes into the research institutions and the think tanks that work for the government and the universities has a high level of Jewish control, and this is a very atheist control. So science, as we see it today, as it is a top-down issue that goes into the down to the grade schools, has an atheist not only twist but just dominance to it. And so this concept of creationist versus science, it sounds like, well, science is right, right? It has to be because it's science. And therefore, creationists are trying to catch up. And the whole dialogue, the problem with creationism is that they're controlling the two sides of the equation. The very simple result is, there's one reality, and whether it's science or creationism, there is an element of both sides. In my book, The Diamond Principle, I talk about the fact that you can see the organization in the universe that indicates a grand design, and in that grand design, you see the intelligence of a creator. And I use the example, if you found a diamond on the far side of the universe, all diamonds are different. They have different flaws. They have different structures based on how they were put together as they were being built. But the bottom line is that the physics of diamond construction, the crystalline structure of diamonds, is going to be the same on the far side of the universe. So there's a grand design here. The DNA in your left hand is equal to the DNA in your right hand, and it's the same as the plant down the street. there's a basic structure to DNA that holds the information code for your genetic structure. And so there is a grand design here, but in the atheist science of today, this is all random. Everything is random. It just happened. There was no grand design to anything. How can you look at all this and say that there was no design? One time I was on the Art Bell Show, and we were talking about this very topic. And I asked Art, I said, is there a bridge down in your town there? And he goes, yeah. And I mean, I'm way off topic. I said, yeah, is there a bridge there? He goes, yeah. I said, did it have an architect? Yeah, it had to have had an architect. And did that architect have training? I mean, would you drive on this bridge without knowing who designed it or the people that built the steel structures and beams and the people who put it together? I mean, there's a lot of confidence you have when you drive out on that bridge, because if that baby breaks, you're going to go down and die, and everybody you know is going to fall down and die on it. So, I mean, when we look around at buildings or bridges or roads, we just assume there was somebody who knew what he was doing that made the design. So why do you look at the universe to something with a grand, complex design that we see and say there's no designer? Wait a minute, boys and girls. It's obvious, but the point is that science today is atheist-driven. It wants to drive home the fact that there is no God, and that science does not need a God. In fact, they're using Stephen Hawking's. When I came out with my book, The Diamond Principle, 1 week later, supposedly Stephen Hawking came out with a new book saying that there was no necessary requirement for God or a divine entity or an initial creative design in our universe, that science could exist without it. And, of course, Stephen Hawking is in a wheelchair, if he's even still alive. And supposedly there's only one guy that can communicate with him who wrote the book in his name. The last thing Stephen Hawking said in the last book that he actually wrote himself, the very last line, says that it is obvious from looking at the universe that there is a grand design. So look at how the atheists are using Stephen Hawking's name and image to push atheism in science. And so, like when you have a creationist science debate, it is assumed that the creationist is an idiot moron who only can read the Bible and is some kind of Bible thumper, and that science is correct because we can measure everything. Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, there isn't any scientist on the planet who was around when the supposed Big Bang happened. If there was, I'd like to meet him, because he's going to be one old dude. So don't let anybody fool you. And so, but the real reality is that creationism is there. For example, I talk about this all the time, in the grand design, the comets, the big comets that come through the solar system and rip it apart and cause damage to the planets, including, we know what happened to Mars, what happened to Earth. We have reports of this from the ancients. Modern science tries to deny this with all of their, every fiber in their existence. They try and deny this because it eats away at their control mechanisms, energy, the fact that they want everybody working a 40-hour work week and honoring their money god. This is atheism. Bankers who worship money, who worship the devil, these are the people that are trying to kill the concept of science. So these debates, so to speak, miss the entire point. It is that if there is one reality, that's the point, and if science is correct, it has to meet with that reality. If creationism is correct, it has to meet with that reality. And somewhere out there is a reality, and obviously science doesn't have it. Obviously, the creationists are working under many false pretenses also. that the issue is that neither side has the final answer, because if they did, there would be a union between the two. And clearly, let me talk about creationists. They make some extremely good points. In fact, in Texas, there have been lawsuits, and in Texas, for example, atheist science has to be taught in the textbooks in the schools by law. There is a law in Texas that says that you cannot teach false information in textbooks in schools. Well, who's the guardian of correct information? Well, the scientists assume that they are. And this also goes along with the cleansing of Wikipedia that I've posted a note on my webpage. I'm not going to go into that on this show. But basically, Wikipedia has been cleansed. Go to my webpage once again and read the posting I put there. It's about the teams of so-called scientific experts who have gone in and cleansed Wikipedia to be equal to the standard atheist-driven science of today that's being pushed down the throats of the public. And you know, I should explain this atheist agenda, because part of it is the destruction of two major religions in the world, Muslim and the Christian religions are being attacked, and one way they do this is by pitting them against each other like they're enemies. And the whole point of Christianity is they don't have enemies. It's like everybody is welcome, is one of the points. But one of the things they're trying to do is pit religions against one another, and that's a typical divide and conquer technique. The part of atheism is that there's no God in science, therefore there's no God in your life, everything is random, you can do whatever you want to do because there are no consequences. And this is being, the attacks on Christianity are just unbelievable today. And they're very subtle, all the way from the movie industries to the just on and on and on. So look at the grief that a guy like Mel Gibson got for making a movie about the crucifixion and telling a real story about it. The story that they're trying to push is that Christ was a Jew and that he died for the Jewish, the so-called chosen people, the Jews. What a complete bunch of twisting of history. You know, and this is the way, like I say, every form of possible attack is occurring on both Christianity and the Muslim and the Buddhist and basically all religions that would give people a basis for living a decent life, if you can understand where this is going. So at any rate, one of the core issues is science. So if you can convince the public that there's no need for a God in science, then if science is the basis of all knowledge and how the solar system works, how the universe works, then why would you need him in any other aspect of your life? So atheist science dominates the spectrum today in education, and this is being pushed down in the universities, and there's a literal takeover of universities that has occurred. And in the peer-reviewed journals, this is a dominant factor. And so, at any rate, how does my science, the comets coming in affecting the solar system, how does that play into this? Well, what I teach is that there is a dynamic universe, a dynamic solar system, that electricity gets involved in a very subtle way, but the main teaching is that change is normal. The fact that we've had thousands of years of good weather is an aberration. That it should change is normal, and they don't want you to know that comets are dirty. They don't want you to know that comets are not dirty snowballs. They want you to believe this fairy tale science. You know, the Big Bang, which is just the most ludicrous concept I could ever imagine, not provable by any stretch of the imagination, but at any rate, okay, enough of that. I just want to reiterate dealing with weather, that the creation of weather is done by the solar system dynamics, the electrical and the conditions in the solar system primarily, light conditions which add to the heat content in the atmosphere, but the weather systems, make no mistake, are driven by electrical conditions. If it were not for the electrical conditions, we would not have weather as we know it. But nobody, with their weather modification or geoengineering, nobody creates weather. They simply modify it. They modify the energy systems that are already there. And that is going on. We have natural conditions of off-balance sun, and you have to understand this as a composite. And the so-called geoengineering, which is going on a constant basis and has been for decades, has to stop. The end results, the side results of what they are doing is devastating the Earth. It's crippling the Earth. And these Dr. Strangeloves, of which there are not just one, but many hundreds, thousands in the military, all doing their job, have to be stopped. This is not a joke. This is serious business, and these people are destroying the planet, literally. And then you look at corporations like the Monsantos and the Cargills and the fertilizer companies, the pharmaceutical companies. The amount of chemical and pharmaceuticals in our water supply is devastating, the destruction of our water supply, the mismanagement, and just one other quick point about the public agencies that are examining the Pacific die-off and other events that are going on. For example, the devastation of the national forest system due to UV light, and I'm sure acid rain is involved in this also. But the public agencies asking for public support, and now I've seen this a number of times, or the West Coast, they're asking for the public to make observations to help them find out what's going on. Well, gee, the people in public office are so rock stupid today. The people in the Department of Natural Resources, the people in the government agencies that are designed to oversee and caretake our natural resources, you know, they're not seeing what's going on. They're not seeing the man-made causes. And it's not just due to you driving your SUV up and down the road. These are serious issues that are being created. The death of the bee population, other issues going on. The large corporations that are doing things, the plant engineering that's going on, the geoengineering, all of these things have to come to a stop, and we have to get back to a life where we are in control of, we're letting nature, we're living with nature, not trying to modify nature to make it so-called better. Okay, now I'm going to turn my attention to volcanoes. We had two major eruptions this past week. One in Ecuador has been going off for some time, for many years actually, but an eruption, recent eruption of the Tungurahua volcano in Ecuador, plume 32,000 feet. It's a volcano. The peak of this volcano is at about 16,000 feet, 16,480 feet to be exact, the altitude of the caldera on that volcano, had a major explosion devastating the area around there, and also Mount Singabung in Sumatra. Now this is near Krakatoa, near the mouth where you enter the South China Sea. And by the way, these are the mountains that were the pillars of Hercules in the tales of old, when the Phoenician and the early Greek seafarers sailed around and visited the continent of Atlantis. That's where they entered. They entered in the Pillars of Hercules, were the sister volcanoes of Krakatoa, at the entry of the straits going into the by Sumatra and Java. So anyway, this volcano now going off, a major blast that destroyed much of the area around the volcano. And of course, when you see the ash feet thick on the ground and the people trying to leave, it's a devastating area. Many people killed. They said the death report was 16, but in these areas, how do you even know that? The death reporting in all natural disasters typically underreported. By the way, there was a report that came in this past week about lightning and visible light around earthquake zones. And back in my early days of studying earth activity, I related it to the connections, the electrical connection with the ionosphere, which in many cases is connected electrically with outer space, just like comet tails. But this, when I was working with the Russians in the mid-1990s, the atmospheric scientists out of Central Russia, Alex Dmitriev and crew, one of the things that they were trying to understand were all of the electrical phenomena near Earth, one of them including around volcanoes, one of them including around earthquakes. And so, of course, they were very happy to see my work because that explained what they were seeing. They were empirical. They were observational scientists. They were atmospheric scientists studying the atmosphere. So they were interested in ball lightning and other electrical phenomena that they were seeing. They were the first ones to see tornadoes on the sun, something that the West ignored for many years, and then all of a sudden NASA scientists pop up and so-called discovered this, something that NASA is good at doing, pretending something isn't there and then all of a sudden discovering it. Very few real announcements or discoveries have come out of NASA. Typically, they're discovered elsewhere, and then all of a sudden, NASA, because it has control of the press and the peer-reviewed journals in the West, can take credit for that and eliminate the original discoveries. But make no mistake about it, the original discoveries of tornadoes on the sun were performed by the Alex Dmitriev and his crew in Central Russia. But talking about volcanoes again, if you take the cyclic eruption cycle of volcanoes on Earth, and you cycle them back in time. Some might be 75 years, some might be 250 years, some might be 1,250 years, whatever those cycles are, they typically go off in cycles. And let me just explain a little bit about what's happening here. When the explosion occurs, it lifts up a tremendous amount of land, of rock and debris, pulverizes it and blows it out the top. Then a lot of that falls back in and closes off the hole, basically the hole that goes down to the magma. The explosive volcanoes have a source of water. It could be underground water. It could be lakes that form nearby. There's some source of water. And eventually that water drops down and starts getting into the magma where it turns to steam. Basically, you have a steam engine, and so when that water turns to steam, it has to go someplace. It's not going to be contained. Steam is the most powerful explosive elements, one of the most powerful explosive elements we know about. It's used as the major fuel in the space shuttle, in the high S rockets, the high specific impulse rockets that are in use today use basically water, hydrogen and oxygen. And so extremely explosive, you're not going to contain this. And so that starts an eruptive cycle in which more water drops down, and then finally, boom, the big load of water drops down, turns to steam in an instant, and boom, off comes the top of the volcano. And you can see that this is kind of a cyclic process that goes on and on. There are the other type of volcanoes, kind of like the shield volcanoes. The Hawaiian are the classic shield volcanoes where the lava flows up out of the caldera and then oozes out, and sometimes it comes out in different places. but basically there's no water that gets down to the magma layer, so that the magma simply moves out because of the tremendous pressure of the mountain pushing down. It forces like a like an artesian well, so to speak, but with lava, forces that lava up and out, and it flows down the side, making layer upon layer of lava. And then these can fissure off and break off during earthquake times. A lot of times these volcanoes, especially the Pacific volcanoes, are also subject to earthquake activity, but they don't become explosive, not the explosive type where the entire top of the mountain or side of the mountain blows, you know, 50,000 feet up into the stratosphere. But at any rate, if you take the explosive volcanoes that with their periodic eruption and you cycle them back in time, like I say, some have maybe a 50-year period, some may 200-year, you cycle them back in time, they all meet, all those cycles meet in one place, and that is the beginning of the Holocene period, the big die-off of the woolly mammoths, the saber-toothed tigers, the sloths, the giant sloths, the other animals, big animals at that time. And you saw a major die-off of animals at that time. That was when one of the big comets came through the solar system. One of the events we know about when Venus came through, Venus the comet, and eventually had two interactions with Earth. We know that from the Mayan, the Popol Vuh of the Mayans, that they were, I believe, 54 years apart, the two encounters with Venus the comet, and it eventually became the planet Venus, and that's why Quetzalcoatl is the premier deity of the Mayan mythology, because it refers to Venus the comet. And of course, as with much in mythology of the Mayans, there are personifications. So Quetzalcoatl was also a man, a Scandinavian-looking man that brought them corn and peace and a way of life. And Quetzalcoatl was also the plumed serpent god of the sky, who ruled the sky, was dominant in the sky. Venus is the primary deity of the Mayan archaeology, something that really was hidden with all of the goofiness with the Mayan calendar and all of that. The real central aspect of the Mayan calendar is the cycle of Venus. And of course, it took many hundreds of years for that to stabilize as Venus became went from its comet phase into the planet phase. I explained what causes explosive volcanoes. It's that cycle of water dumping down. And then when the plume blasts up, that is like a finger, electrical finger, connecting to the magma down below, which has a lot of metal in it, liquefied metal. And so the column reaching up is like an electrical finger pointing up to the ionosphere and connects electrically with the ionosphere. So you see these amazing displays of lightning shooting out of the plume and off into the atmosphere and down to the ground around the outside of the plume. And so I have some pictures. If you look on my sales page down at the very, very bottom, there's my big poster. I think it's the 30-year anniversary poster. On there, there's a photograph of the some of the Chilean volcanoes of many years ago, and tremendous daylight displays of lightning. I was at a American Geophysical Union meeting once, and that poster was part of my poster. That was the 30-year anniversary poster is a modification of one of my American Geophysical Union posters. Anyway, it had that picture on there, and I had a group of graduate students around me, and I was talking about, they were very interested in my work and in my poster, and I was showing them the volcano and explaining that this was energy from the ionosphere, and up came their mentor, and he was extremely angry that they were talking to me. And he got very huffy about this, and he said, this is all generated, all this electricity is generated in the volcanic plume itself. It's due to turbulent activity, because that was the standard paradigm and still is the standard paradigm for where lightning comes from, an absolutely ridiculous concept. It has no scientific merit at all, yet here's a guy with a PhD who's mentoring graduate students trying to, and then he comes up and he says, no, that is not what's going on. Don't listen to this man. He's giving you incorrect information. That's what he's trying to tell them about me. And the students pipe up and they say, but the electricity is coming out of the cloud. And obviously, if the electricity were being generated in the cloud, it would discharge within the cloud long before it would ever discharge outside of the cloud. So the fact that the lightning was discharging outside of the volcanic plume was proof that it was only part of an electrical circuit and that the battery was not inside or being generated inside the plume. And these are graduate students pointing out to their mentor, professor, that I was right. And he just slammed them. He says, no, that's not the way it is. This is generated inside the plume, end of story. And he made them leave. He wouldn't let them talk to me anymore. This is the state of graduate school education today. Okay, so on to the next topic. I want to spend about the last 8 minutes here talking about what the English and Germans have found out about wind generation. Now, just about every show now, I talk about the three-blade wind systems and how it was planned. It was a planned design to fail. It was a planned failure. And so exactly what was going on? The major corporations, the Siemens, the General Electrics, somewhere in their top, very top management and control, because these companies have a big hand in nuclear power. They have control systems. They have other aspects. General Electric builds nuclear generators and sells them worldwide and all a lot of components. But they also were involved in the wind generation. So for 20 years, we've been installing, not me, but the industry has been installing big wind generators, 1.5 megawatts and now larger. Some as big as 5 megawatts are going in gigantic systems. And from the very beginning, I was involved in alternative energy and my own scientific work in the background dealing with corporations. And I gave many presentations showing that the three-blade wind generator system would not work. And I showed why. It's very simple. And the term that I used was scalability. It did not scale up. You can have a small, let's take a small 3-foot diameter a multi-blade wind system that you might use on a sailboat or on a farm. And these are on the market, and they're sold now quite regularly. You can buy them for under $1,000 for a, say, a 500 or a 1 kilowatt wind generator. Then that's the maximum energy that they will put out, the maximum kilowatt rating that they would put out at a 30 mile an hour wind. 30 mile an hour is kind of the standard in the industry. But they're very efficient. The little wind generators are very, very efficient because they spin very fast. But now as you take the three-blade system and you move it up to bigger and bigger sizes, there's about 20 factors that contribute to its efficiency. All of those factors go down as you make them bigger. So you cannot make a big three-blade system that's efficient. For one thing, you'd need about 1,000-mile-an-hour wind, and the thing would rip itself apart, spinning as fast as it has to spin to be efficient. And so in their ignorance or planned ignorance, I'm not sure which, but I would suspect in their ignorance, NASA approved this design as the most efficient to use. And since that point, since that NASA approval of the three-blade wind generators design, the industry followed that standard. And I said, it ain't going to work. I went on, I've been on radio shows. I was on Coast to Coast AM, did a full radio show with host George Norrie on the myth of alternative energy. And one of the things I pointed out is that my maximum calculation and estimate for the three-blade wind generator was 10% efficient, and that was at maximum wind velocity. And so in the industry started out, they were selling it at 80% efficiency. That's what they were trying to sell the customer base worldwide. And so it became obvious when they first installed them that no, it was going to be around 20%. And now in Germany, this is my point, this article just came out, the Germans and the English are now finding out what the Dutch had found out a long time ago. The Dutch were the first to invest heavily into the wind generation for their national power source. In fact, one day the Dutch actually generated 100% of all of their electricity from wind power, and it was a big deal. But the next day, they didn't generate hardly any because they had one day with a lot of wind. But the point is that the systems, the three-blade system, is terribly inefficient. The Germans and English found out that they were running at 2.25%. That's just a little over 2% efficient. In other words, they were getting back 2% of the designated energy generation standard or statement specification for the three-blade wind generator. This is unbelievable, but it's coming home to roost. The investors are losing their money. Many have never been paid a dividend for their investment. The companies are going belly up because the business plan failed because the basic data was incorrect. But what this has done, this has given a black eye to alternative energy. Wind generation is the primary source of natural energy generation that's most viable. Now, I've worked privately on Tesla projects, and there's a problem with Tesla. The problem is that it's very hard to control, and it's when there's solar storm or rapidly changing solar storm activity, you have a protection issue. It's an extremely difficult technology to control. And so this was blatantly demonstrated by the misuse of this by the millboys up in Ottawa, west of Ottawa in Canada, when the Northeast power outage occurred. That's what caused it, was the misuse, the millboys up there playing with a Tesla tower. And that came out just after my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. But at any rate, back to the topic of wind generation, this has given wind and alternative energy a black eye, and now they're screaming for nuclear and coal to return in the energy industry, and this is exactly what was pre-planned decades ago when they introduced the tremendously inefficient, just complete corruption in the alternative energy industry. Anyway, this is a huge story. And I'm out of time here. Remember, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. I have my ebook, Water. You get free with any water filter purchase, with any filter elements, whatever water filter product you buy, you will get a free copy of my ebook, Water. That's the latest of my books. I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.